Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another ensued episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Well, coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Josh Solomon and Matt Dyson. They are from One Theater's Lend Me a Tenor, and they will be talking to Tom Williams about the show. Also, Chicago critic Tom Williams brings us another audio review. And of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Chicago, and welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of September 18th, 2006. Jackie Taylor's world-renowned Black Ensemble Theater will be celebrating its 30th anniversary this fall, and they aren't cutting any corners. They are going to be launching two, yes, you heard me, two world premiere productions. Those sensational soulful 60s is going to be presented by the Black Ensemble Touring Venture, and Don't Shed a Tear, the story of Billie Holiday, that will be beginning in November at the BET Theater. You should be able to check that out there. Now, those sensational soulful 60s was written and directed by Miss Taylor herself. It is described as a highly energetic and fun remembrance of the golden era of the 1960s. The Black Ensemble Theater, famous for taking on legendary performers, will be bringing back the hits of Aretha Franklin, Gladys Knight, Patti LaBelle, Sam Cooke, Otis Redding, as well as Sammy Davis Jr. Don't Shed a Tear, the story of Billie Holiday, is a co-written production by Miss Taylor and Don Bless Mitchell. The show will be chronicling the life of jazz legend Billie Holiday, but of course they called her Lady Day. Remember, you can see all this starting in October and going through November. Come help celebrate Black Ensemble Theater's 30th anniversary and check out these two great world premieres. Well, Chicago's Children's Theater Company has added a fourth production to their 2006-2007 season. You will be able to see the show Go Dog Go in a circus tent set up in the middle of Grant Park. The show Go Dog Go has been adapted by Stephen Deitz and Allison Gregory and is described as a children's classic where the dogs are king. The show is starting in April, and Andrew White from Looking Glass Theater has been penned to direct it. For more information, stay tuned to Theater in Chicago's Children's Show section. Director Kate Worski returns to the Goodman Theater this October to take the helm of the world premiere production of Noah Heidel's Vigils. Chicago audiences may remember this show as being a staged reading in the Goodman Theater's 2005 New Stages series, a performance series devoted to new and only new plays. Noah Heidel, who has been produced at some of the nation's leading theaters, places some unconventional characters in awkward situations and helps them explore their desire, their grief, their humor, all in the modern life. The cast for Vigils includes Tony Award nominee Joanna Day, Mark Grapey, Steve Key, and Coburn Goss. So click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section to find out more information about Goodman Theater's Vigils. Well, congratulations to Rogue Theater for celebrating their fifth anniversary with Miss Lulu Brett, What's unique about this 5th anniversary opening is that it is now in their new permanent home up in Andersonville. Congratulations, Rogue Theater. And last but not least, the Trib Stage Ticker is reporting that Terrapin Theater Company and Serendipity Theater Company have merged together. These two Chicago fringe theater companies have merged and will now be known as the Serendipity Theater Collective. And I can't tell you how excited I am about that. Congratulations, both Terrapin and Serendipity Theater Companies. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago news podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with more news ready to stick in your ear. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of Lend Me a Tenor. Lend Me a Tenor, a tour de farce by Ken Ludwig, directed by Justin Emilio, produced by One Theater Company at Athenaeum Theater. One Theater Company delivers a zany farce. One Theater Company's ambitions are boundless, and their latest equity production of Lend Me a Tenor is another indicator of their dedication to their craft. This show works and delivers an enjoyable evening of theater. This rib-tickling comedy by Ken Ludwig, who wrote Crazy for You and Moon Over Buffalo, among others, was a sensation on Broadway in 1989, garnering 2 Tony Awards, and is guaranteed to have audiences teary-eyed from laughing. The world-famous tenor Tito Morelli arrives too late to rehearse for his role as Othello at the Cleveland Grand Opera, the centerpiece of the most important fundraiser in its 1934 season. Through a hilarious series of mishaps, Tito is given a double dose of tranquilizers, which, mixed with booze that he has consumed, and of course he passes out. His pulse is so low that Sanders, played by Skip Lundy, and his assistant Max, played by Matt Dyson, believe he is dead. What to do? Max is an inspiring singer, and Sanders persuades him to go on in Morelli's Othello costume complete with blackface and try to fool the audience into thinking he's Tito. Max succeeds admirably, but Morelli comes too and gets into his costume. Now 2 Othellos are running around in costume at the hotel, and 2 women are running around in lingerie, each thinking Tito is wooing them into bed. I was exhausted from laughing so much from this show. Ludwig is a master of farce, with a broad, over-the-top comedy with lots of slapstick door slamming, understated misunderstandings, double meanings, and mistaken identities. Director Justin Emilio has the cast moving at high speeds with precise timing and energy. This is a fun show that quickly engages us and takes us on a hilarious ride through old-time comedy. The show reminded me of a Marx Brothers film. Skip Lundy as Sanders, the neurotic opera company manager, demonstrates why he is a comic talent of the first order, and his unique blend of manic behavior and mischievousness is charming. Andrea Wilgus as Maggie radiated innocence and beauty. This fine ensemble works smoothly. Amy Dolenz, Julia, Jake Salas, Bellhop, and Aaron Hunt's Tito land their comedy deftly. I was impressed with the performance of young Matt Dyson as the bumbling Max, who goes from wannabe opera singer to the star tenor of the opera. Dyson has the innate likability, native charm, and expressive body language that talented actors instinctively possess. Matt Dyson is a welcome new comic talent here in Chicago. Lend Me a Tenor has nonstop laughs, produced by clever plotting, excellent characterizations performed efficiently in the small, intimate space at the Athenaeum Theater. The result is a hoot. This show is a fine date show and a perfect light comedy that will let you escape from the madcap world of farce. I like the flashback, the rewind effect at the end, the reenactments of the scenes that show hints of a video rewind. A marvelous gesture that garners more laughs. Lend Me a Tenor is vintage farce that never grows old, only better with age. One theater company is growing into a worthy young troupe. My rating on this show is recommended. It is at the Athenaeum Theater, 2936 North Southport Avenue in Chicago. The running time is 2 hours with intermission. It runs through October 8th. For more information, call 773-622-0585. That's 733-622-0585. Thank you for listening, and go see a play this week. You are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guests this week are from the One Theater Company, which is opening up a terrific production of Lend Me a Tenor. Our guest is the artistic director, Josh Solomon, and who I consider the star of the show is a new talent who has just moved to Chicago not too long ago. His name is Matt Dyson. But first, let me say hello to the young guy who started this theater group a few years back. Hello, Josh.
Hey.
And hello, Matt.
How are you?
Okay, now that we've established the voices, Josh, tell me, why did you pick Lend Me a Tenor? Which, by the way, is a great choice.
Yeah, Lend Me a Tenor is a really, really good show. It got reviewed really, really well on Broadway. Everyone I've ever mentioned the show to or spoke about the show with has only positive things to say about it. It's a ton of fun. There are a bunch of reasons we've never done a straight-up comedy before. I definitely needed to pick a show after our production of City of Angels last year. All of our shows this season needed to have a good chance of selling well, and Lend Me a Tenor certainly has that name. And it's a production just I have fond memories of as well. I did it when I was in high school.
Okay. Well, Ken Ludwig's a terrific writer.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
To me, the whole character... Well, give us a little bit of what Lend Me a Tenor's about. Then I can set up about Matt's role.
Indeed. Lend Me a Tenor is the story of the Cleveland Grand Opera Company that's bringing in a big Italian opera star to sing at their big, huge benefit in the 1930s. His name is Tito Morelli, and they're very nervous to have him come in. And finally, Tito Morelli shows up, and through a series of mishaps and adventure... we believe that Tito Morelli is dead, and Saunders, who runs the Cleveland Grand Opera, and Max's assistant decide that Max is going to be Otello in the opera instead of Tito, Tito being dead. So Max dresses up as Tito, goes off and sings. Everybody thinks he's wonderful. Meanwhile, Tito is actually not dead, dresses up the exact same way as Otello. They're running around the stage in blackface, kissing women, and...
Yeah, it's a classic farce.
It's classic, and then it all ends up okay in the end.
And Ken Ludwig's a terrific writer. He did Noises Off, and a lot of people don't realize that he did the book for Crazy for You.
Crazy for You,
which
indeed
was fabulous. I mean, that was a great show. So, Matt, tell us about your character. I mean, I never left. I think he's the funniest character.
Yes, and Ludwig sets it up. So if I was not funny, it would just be ridiculous because he puts me this skinny little white boy and, you know, blackface and wig, and I'm running all over the place, and it's entirely situational. I mean,
you were very funny. And
thank you.
One of the things I got a kick out of is all the nonverbals too. I mean, you landed all your jokes. Your timing was like a veteran. And you're playing off two veteran equity actors too, and you're staying right with them. That had to be cool.
That was one of the more challenging thing. I mean, Aaron Hunt and Skip Lundby are not only, you know, really talented actors, but they're both huge presences on stage. So
yeah,
half the time
you and Skip at the beginning, yeah, you stayed with them real well.
I was just trying to tread water for most of it, so it was really fun.
And your voice sounded pretty good too. Do you have a singing background?
I do. I did not do musical theater in college, mainly because I cannot dance to save my life. And so
you were two out of the three threats, huh?
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. If they'll cut out the dances and just have me stand around and sing, or and watch other people dance. That'd be awesome.
But you're having fun. How do you prepare to do a role like this? Because I mean, you're doing pratfalls and flops all over the place, and I mean,
yeah,
it's like you had a workout.
I mean, it's an absolute trip. The show, like any show that you have to stretch out your hamstrings beforehand and ice down your knees afterwards, is just ridiculous. So we stretch out a lot, and we rehearsed a lot. We read the show a lot. And piece by piece, we put it all that stuff together.
Well, Josh, tell us how you made the decision of doing it in the upstairs studio theater at Athenaeum, which is a kind of a small spot to do a farce, you know, door slamming with all the doors. But, you know, you guys made it work. And
yeah, you know, I think that I have produced on a major scale, especially for a theater of our size, on the main stage. We did The Baker's Wife, which is a fairly large show, and we did City of Angels with a 20-piece orchestra. So we have the experience to actually produce it on a larger scale.
Yes, you do.
But I think containing it in a very small space, and so it almost feels explosive, makes it funnier. So when all eight actors of the show are on stage in their crazy-looking costumes, you can actually feel the audience almost back off a little bit because they're so close to the insanity.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that the intimacy really, you know, adds to it.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if Matt in particular's jokes would have, you were talking about his nonverbal jokes, he does a couple takes, you know, he does some bigger ones, but he does a couple just takes with his eyes.
Oh, yes.
That I don't think you would notice in a smaller space, I mean in a larger space.
Well, Matt, that's one of the things that I think set up a lot of the humor is you do react to everything in the show. You know, and there's nothing worse sometimes than seeing an actor who kind of blanks out when he's not, like, close, you know, really in a scene. And
just
then all
doing
of a sudden he's there. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Or he's like a fly on the wall. And this is such an intense show, and it's such a loony show that you really have to react to it.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And I can see you were really up for it.
Yeah, I think the reactions that Max has are equally as important as his lines, because everything is, like, he's just having to stand around and have all these things happen to him, and all he can do is react as best he can.
Well, you guys worked hard because the blocking was amazing. And, you know, as people know in a farce, there's a lot of running around and door slamming and timing. One door has to open, another one has to close, and it pretty well worked, even when the door handle came off. We were all looking to see how you guys had reacted. And everyone didn't miss a beat.
Man, that was terrible. On opening night, a door handle broke, a doorknob broke off our bathroom door. It was very nerve-wracking. I actually had to go backstage to hold it at that
point.
Did
you really?
Yeah. Yeah, was very, very nerve-wracking. But, you know, Justin Emilio, who directed the show, really did a fabulous job with the staging. I think the staging is impeccable. He staged it more like a dance than anything else. They didn't get to choose very much of their movements.
So it was choreographed. It was blocked out completely.
Yeah, almost entirely.
Well, you almost have to with the size of the theater and with the action of the play, because otherwise I could see you getting lost or bumping into one another.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's such a small space, and there are so many things we have to do that everything was planned out.
Particularly at the end, because a lot of people don't realize that you guys kind of fast-forward the entire play. And last time I saw it, a theater at the center did it. They had a much larger stage, and it was more obvious what was going on. But I'll tell you, you guys pulled that off, and that was amazing. A lot of people were impressed by that.
Yeah, at the end of the show, we do the entire show again, and I think it's 88 seconds. And so everything's done to this really, really fast-paced music and, right, the overture to Carmen, as it were.
Yeah,
and we planned that out beat by beat. We listened to the music and beats according to that. So that
tell us how long the rehearsal process was for a show like this.
Rehearsal was 4 weeks. We practiced for about 4 hours a night. And then we'd practice 4 hours a night, and then on Saturday we'd have a big 6-hour, do it as many times as we could rehearsal. For four different Saturdays.
Well, it shows, because, as you know, comedy is all about timing.
Absolutely.
And it's all about playing off one another. And I'll tell you, I thought it was a major accomplishment. And I brought a friend of mine who is a real Broadway snob. hates storefront theater. I don't want to see that. And the only reason she came to see the show is because we were having dinner, and I told her, I'm not driving her home, so she's either take a cab or come to the show. And she says, all right. And she loved it, and she thought you were very good.
God.
And so that's, I mean, I like a lot of stuff, but, you know, when you can please the really tough, snobbish people who, you know, if it isn't Broadway or if it isn't, a multi-million-dollar production, you know, they're not satisfied. They can't gear down. And she thought it was terrific.
You know, I think one of the things that makes this show accessible to somebody like that is something that really gets me when theater companies gear down a show to produce it. Like, if, say, you're going to produce, I actually really like Walter, but Porchlight's doing Ragtime, you know, and when you eliminate elements to a production that's written with those things in mind, mm-hmm. let's say a full orchestra or a revolving set or whatever it is, essentially making a huge production very small, it could be disappointing when you see it. I don't think we actually eliminated anything from
the show.
No,
you didn't. And I just recently saw that, you know, Theater at the Center's production of it. And you guys were right there. I knew it was coming, and you landed it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might be the problem with some storefront theater. I think good storefront theater doesn't eliminate anything, doesn't make excuses for it being
small. I think a lot of it is direction, and a lot of it is talent.
Direction is huge.
I mean,
yeah.
I used to say that to have small theater companies do Shakespeare, they ought to have a warning: enter at your own risk. I mean, you know, Shakespeare's hired. But let's go back. Let's go into how you started the theater company and a little bit of your history. You mentioned some of it, but I mean, it's not often. I mean, you're a veteran artistic director, and you're what, 21 now?
Yeah, I'm 21 now, and now I feel a lot more comfortable being the artistic director. And
so give us the history, when you started and what got you to start.
So I've been running this company for about 5 years. We started, we produced a outreach production version of The Wiz, which was before we were incorporated and before we got our 501c3, where there was 85 children from second grade to seniors in high school on the west side. When I was in high school, I went into the west side to Chicago, and we were like, you know what, let's produce this.
Where'd you go to high school?
Niles West High School in Skokie.
Okay.
Let's produce this show, The Wiz. You know, it'll be really a great experience for all of them. We have this high school theater that we get to have, but they don't have anything, so... there were 85 kids in it. I directed and produced it, and there I learned fundraising and learned, you know, we had to get all this stuff together for the show. We essentially put sound equipment and light equipment in a Chicago public school, and it was a really cool experience. We brought 20 musicians in to do it.
So how many 16-year-olds just go and do that? I mean, usually you're trying to get your driver's license and get the use of the car and hope to get a rolling. And
yeah, I was 16, and then I turned 17 after that production, and it was... It was cool because theater, the process of it is great because it's also a social experience. And that's sort
of... Oh, yeah, because it's collaborative. Yeah,
right. So it was all my friends doing that show. You know, in high school, we all got together. You know, one of my friends music directed and one of them choreographed. And
all right, so now you did this, but what made you do... What was your next show?
Well, it was really hard. It was very, very difficult. This was in the projects. So we had generators that had to run the power, and they almost got stolen, and everything that could have went wrong went wrong. And at the end of it, I thought, man, if we could produce here... We could do professional theater for sure. So I made a budget. I researched theaters. I met Fred Solari, who said, you know, come do a show here. And Fred really took me under his wing. He started producing theater when he was 18.
Tell us who Fred is now.
Fred Solari, up until very recently, ran the Athenaeum Theater, where I've always produced. Fred died.
Yeah, tragically young, fairly young.
Yeah,
in his 50s,
what I would say, he died of a broken heart. His son, oldest son, died about a year before him. But he... was huge influence. He took me in. He said, do a show here. We did the musical You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown on the third floor of the Athenaeum, which was too really nice. The reader said nice things about it, and lots of people came to the show, and we had money at the end of it. We didn't pay anybody, obviously. And the biggest question mark in my head still is, why did I go from doing You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown to a show that Stephen Schwartz and Joseph Stein, who wrote the book to A Fiddler on the Roof. We after that, we produced a show called The Baker's Wife.
Yes, that's the first show of yours that I saw.
Right.
That was quite ambitious. On the big stage, what was the cast of?
Yeah, a cast of about 16, a huge cast, gigantic set with an equity contract. We used a guy named Peter Kavoyan, who was Tate in the Chicago version of Ragtime. And wow, I was in over my head during that show. It was... was huge. It
was
gigantic.
Kudos for trying it. You know, there's nothing like being young and you don't know enough to know you can't do it. So guess what? You did it. I really respect that because everyone plays it so cautious. You know, you can spend your whole life being cautious and you know, never accomplish anything, playing it safe. It's like television sitcoms. You know, they never take a chance and they bore you to tears.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing. I think I was actually quoted in the Tribune saying, man, what we're certainly not going to do is be boring. It's either going to be really great or a spectacular failure, but it's sure going to be spectacular no matter what because it was huge. I mean, everything about it was huge.
Yeah.
And for my age, I was 17 doing that show. I turned 18 after it closed. Yeah, and it was a ton of fun. And after that, I
thought you basically did a good job on it.
Yeah, I thought, and then after that, we decided, okay, let's produce another huge one. So we did City of Angels, which was twice as big as The Baker's Wife.
Now that is a big show. I'll tell you how big that show is. Everybody's afraid to do it, you know.
Yeah, everybody's afraid to do it.
It's expensive and...
I was too stupid to be afraid to do it, so I wasn't afraid to do it.
Let's hope you don't ever lose that.
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah.
So we did City of Angels, cast of 22, orchestra of 22, yeah. Revolve, gigantic set. And it wasn't as good as The Baker's Wife, but I'm glad I did it. I learned.
Well, you know, you saying that, I disagree. Because it was more ambitious.
Yeah,
it's all a matter
it was
of scale.
So much more. It was a huge scale. This was Broadway.
I mean, there was a few voices I would have, you know, I would have cast a few other people, but, you know, it's all a learning curve.
This was Broadway touring quality size. And after we did that show, we lost money on the show. But I learned more than I think I could ever learn in a six-year college program for producing theater.
Yeah.
Boy, in those 3 years, I learned a lot. And then that brings us sort of to this season. We've just produced the last 5 years. We actually lost an actress for that show about 4 days before it started. She's now in Tokyo, so we had to cast again on the run, which I think kind of hurt us. But she did what she could.
Yeah, I think if I remember saying that show, I think you got one out of the two right.
And that's what every single person said. Andrew Weir, who was in that show, is phenomenal.
He is very strong. And unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of young girls, and maybe they'll hear it. And it's my pet peeve, but I'm not the only one, that can't project. They can't.
Oh, Chris
Jones
said it
too. I'm not talking about volumes. Yeah, I mean, 2 feet away, if they turn their head, you cannot hear them. And in singing, and in a show that's all being sung, that's kind of fatal.
Yeah,
he could belt.
The fatal flaw to that show. I was real proud of how that show looked and sounded. Boy, that orchestra was great. Kim Beasley conducted and music directed. We used the full orchestra for the last 5 years. It sounded wonderful, and she's coming back to do Cinderella with us next.
Oh, good.
So that'll be a lot of fun. And that brings us to here. We produced this is our first full season, last 5 years, Lend Me a Tenor, Cinderella.
So you're in the learning curve. You had some successes. You made some money. You lost some money. Well, that's...
We made money on last 5 years. We're almost certainly going to make money on this show. So it, you know, I think I've learned a lot. And now...
So how did you meet Matt? So Matt, what made you come and of course, I asked that once before. What made you want to do this role? And I said, well, because they asked me. You know? Other than that.
What made me want to do?
Yeah, give us your background now.
Well, I am from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I went to school. I went to college at the University of Oklahoma. But there's not a lot of theater opportunity in Norman, Oklahoma. So,
oh, really?
Surprisingly, I know. Yeah. So I moved up to Chicago a year and 3 months ago. And I did a few productions with Easy Street Players here at the Athenaeum last year. And
what did you do with them?
We did Barefoot in the Park, which was actually...
That's where I knew I saw that show. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I was the telephone repairman, so
yes.
You didn't see me.
Yeah,
for very
you had.
Long.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we were doing that in Studio 2 while they were doing City of Angels downstairs, mm-hmm. And then. Yeah, I did some random. Like we did The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, which was one of those things where it's you travel into elementary schools in the quote unquote Chicagoland area, which ends up being like Indiana and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that coming from Oklahoma. So lesson learned when we were getting up at 5 a.m. to get to schools by 8.
Wow. well, that shows you must want it. You're one of a big trend that Chicago is now, you know, the theater capital. It's New York has a few big spectacular shows, but on every other level we beat them, including young talent. That's why they're coming here to recruit. Look at So you're in the right town.
That's why I hope. Yeah, it sure seems that way.
Well, tell us about comedy. I mean, you know, generally young guys have a problem with comedy because I think comedy is the hardest to do, and I've been correct to say musical because you got to always land the song. But I think comedy is very, very hard because it's either funny, the audience either laughs or it doesn't. I mean, you either time it right or it's a big bomb.
Absolutely.
There's no in between.
And you know right away if it's good or not, you know? Yeah. But if it's good, I mean, there's no better feeling than having the audience respond and hearing that immediately and then getting to see them. Like, once we hook them in Lend Me a Tenor, then they're with us the whole way, and at the end...
Well, those early scenes with you and Skip, I mean, you've got to hook them. You've got to set the premise and hook them.
Yeah.
And, of course, some good writing helps.
Not bad, yeah. Yeah, he's all right, yeah, so...
Man. Ludwig's terrific. So you just auditioned and tell us the story how you...
You know...
Because this guy's a major talent.
Justin Emilio, I met through auditions for a general company, and Justin's now the associate artistic director here. And the best part, he's become more and more involved in our company, and he teaches with me now, and he's directing a bunch. And the best part of bringing somebody like Justin in is he brings with him a whole bunch of talent. And Justin brought with him Matt, and also brought with him a couple of the understudies for this show. And now we're sort of combining all of our people, which makes the product that you see on stage. And I think has helped us huge. I mean, just in Matt alone. You know, I would have never found Matt without Justin.
Well, that's all part of the growth curve.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing comedies is always fun. And as a business decision, it was smart for you to do that because you have less budget and you can, you know, get a few bucks ahead so that Cinderella, you can do shows like that. Because the biggest gap we have now is the non-equity musicals. There just aren't enough groups doing them because of the expense and, the talent level.
I mean, and I don't know what you would consider. I mean, we have an equity contract now. Okay. It's very small, but we're going to be doing small musicals. That's what we do.
So, but you're going to do like Porchlight, you're going to keep the equity contracts if you can?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Having the equity contracts is huge if I did all musicals with all, like, the last 5 years and I cast 9 months out all the time, I could cast every single one. But trying to find an older actor like Aaron Hunt or like Skip Lundby is really, really difficult. And the question then comes, why are you non-equity if you are a more experienced actor and you're good?
Yeah.
Which is probably means either you don't care or you're not very good.
Well, I'll add one more thing. Groups like Timeline, there are a number of people who do make the kind of money where they don't need the insurance and they don't need it as a full-time job and they act because they really like it. So groups like Timeline are full of those people. I know some of them have jobs they make 70, 80, 90, 100,000 a year. So they don't need to be equity.
Yeah, but those people aren't coming to my general auditions.
No, they're not. So you're dealing with the younger and where you need the older. Well, Porchlight found that out. When they went with equity contracts, they were able to fill that one or two key slots.
Yeah.
And make all
what we're looking at is between one and three slots that I can fill with. I mean, this show would have been really, really difficult to cast non-equity.
Yeah.
Saunders and Tito are two older roles that I think would have been really difficult. Cinderella, the prince is equity. The fairy godmother will be equity. And I think the stepmother or the king will probably be equity. And those are two older roles. And the prince is coming from New York.
Okay. So what's the future for you guys?
Well, I'd like to be doing a more original work, musical. Very few people do it. Probably we had a discussion about stages the other day. Very few people do it because it's really, really difficult.
The process takes...
The process is very expensive and takes a long time. But I'd like to be putting more musicals out there, you know?
Well, what we like that you're doing, you were doing musicals that aren't produced a lot.
And that's sort of what I see our mission as, in some ways, doing shows that people couldn't see otherwise, which would be original or which would be a show like The Baker's Wife or like City of Angels that nobody is doing. Actually, nobody's doing Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella.
Yeah, and that's a good choice, and it's an excellent score.
So it's a difficult find. Finding an original musical is close to impossible. That's actually good.
Yeah, but it's hard.
But even finding a show that nobody's doing and is good is difficult because if it's good, why isn't anybody doing it?
Well, I mean, Fiorello Timeline just did that.
No, great choice.
And that show hasn't been done in over 40 years, and that nobody can believe it. It's such a great show.
Yeah, that's
so
wonderful.
There's
piece.
A few around there.
There are a few around.
Dinosaurs
absolutely.
Like Me will recommend a few to you guys, and then have you listen to the soundtracks, and then, you know, if you get in love with the music, you know, you'll figure out how to do
it. Yeah, there are shows out there.
So, Matt, what's coming up for you?
Well, I'm next working on a production of Laughter on the 23rd Floor, right here at the Athenaeum Theater. Easy Street Productions is producing it, and Aubrey Brown, who is an understudy in our show, is directing it. So we'll be doing that in November.
So you like doing comedy, huh?
Oh my gosh, it's so fun.
I mean, you talk about two good scripts. Wow.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, I've been really lucky.
Because, you know, a lot of people, Laughter on the 23rd Floor is... It's all about the people that wrote Sid Caesar and all the early television.
Right. Yeah. Yes,
Neil Simon he used to schlep and go get coffee for all those guys. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We've been getting Netflix lots of Sid Caesar stuff. Yeah. We've been trying to watch. So.
Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
What about musicals? Now you could.
I
know the dancing is a problem, but you
well,
can
you
sing.
Know,
sounds like
people keep saying they can teach me. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean I would love to do whatever.
Is your goal to make theater your career?
I'd love to, yeah. Okay. That was why I studied in college, and so that was why I moved up here.
Well, you're at a great town to do it because opportunities come. If you keep learning your craft and getting seen, you know, and you, all of a sudden you're the right guy at the right, you know, Marriott picks you up, or Theater at the Center, or Drury Lane Oakbrook or something. You know, look at Spelling Bee, half the cast of that. Yeah. Kids that did just a couple of shows, Derek Trumbly. Was he in Baker's Wife? Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, okay, because I saw him in Fantastics at No Exit, okay, a little cafe where he was waiting tables and then doing the Fantastics. And I remember he said, "Yeah, I saw him on the bus." And he says, "Yeah, I got Spelling Bee. Is that a pretty good show?" And he had no idea what he got in, but he was the right guy for it.
Yeah, no, he's great.
He really is.
He was in The Baker's Wife. He was Dominique. I went to school with him for a year.
Oh, okay.
There was a bunch of people in the show. Some of them are out of town.
So it does happen, Matt, in this town.
Yeah, or Michael Ingersoll. You know, he just came from Memphis. Angela's now nominated for an Equity Jeff Award.
Yeah,
his
she's
wife.
Super, too. Yeah, oh, I think she's going to win. That's just my guess.
She's amazing. She was great in that Secret Garden. And Michael's now going to make $110,000 doing theater. So it's... What a great city.
Yeah, making money doing what you like. That's what it. But, you know, you're to be congratulated with the vision and the fearlessness of being this teenage kid. And, you know, when everyone raps teenagers, in the meantime, you start a theater group and start doing some major productions that you know, savvy theater people were scared to death to do. And you made them work. I know you're, Baker's Wife and City of Angels, you know, because you're learning your craft, you weren't totally satisfied with it. I'll tell you, just the fact that you did them, anything that negative anyone says, you know, you should just look at them and say, but I did it.
No, and that's exactly what I feel like. And, you know, ultimately what I'd love to be able to do is to say to somebody like Matt, maybe in 3-4 years, you can make theater your living because you can work for us. Our budget keeps getting larger. You know, we keep getting approved for grants, and that would be my dream.
Well, that's the next thing I want to congratulate on. In a short period of time, you've done more equity shows than non-equity.
Yeah.
And I know theater groups that are scared to death, have been around 10 years and do good work, but are still afraid, you know, to make that jump. They just don't have the big vision.
Yeah, I never know if it's bravery or stupidity or if they're the same thing, but I'm glad for whatever it is because I think it makes for a much more interesting process. For sure.
Well, it's a challenge because you know the rents and the overhead has got to be a killer, and you just never know if people are going to be there or not. And that, but you know,
I've learned to be a lot smarter about money. There's a lot more ways than just ticket sales to bring in money. We have a giant education program at this point.
Good. Children's shows. I know a lot of theater groups.
Children's shows and classes. We have a big fun. We brought Jason Robert Brown in to do a fundraiser. Adam Pascal from Rent is coming in to do a fundraiser.
Wow, terrific.
So we're trying to think of ways more and more often we run a fundraiser at Soldier Field to bring
in
funds.
So let's, in the interest of time here, because we're just about out of time, give a little promo for here's the commercial for Lend Me a Tenor. What days it's playing, what phone number.
Come see Lend Me a Tenor. It's a fabulous show. Read Tom Williams' review of it, and you will definitely want to come see the show. We opened on September 5th, and we close on October 8th. We run Thursday through Sunday, 8 o'clock on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. 2 o'clock on Sunday, we're at the Athenaeum Theater. It's 2936 Southport on the second floor. And you can get tickets at our website, which is onetheater.com, onetheatre.com. Or by giving Ticketmaster a call, 312-902-1500.
And so what's the ticket price?
It's a lot of different ones. The regular ticket price is $25. We have $20 senior tickets, $15 student tickets, and just announced, you heard me right, $5 Thursday tickets. $5 Thursdays.
$5 for an equity show on a Thursday.
What a deal.
Yeah, and even at your highest price of $25 is nothing, because most productions of this with equity actors in it, you're in the $50-$60 range. And folks, it's a value, and it's all relative to, you know, to what you get. And it's a good night. You'll leave laughing and entertained, and that's what theater's about. Matt, you just got to keep up the good work. I mean,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I know and I'm not that totally impressed. You know, I'm pro actor. I like to honor people when they do a good job, but you certainly did. But when you got my friend Marilyn, who is very tough, and she just thought you were terrific in it.
Tell her I said thank you.
Oh, yeah, I definitely will. Well, folks, that's all for this week. Go see a play. Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening to this ensued episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. But before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote has to deal with season, and it comes from The Merchant of Venice, Act 5, Scene 1. How many things by season seasoned are to their right praise and true perfection. Well, we can't thank you enough for listening to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, that theater's happening. Don't miss it.